This is OTB AM.
If you were to have to pick a combination to win, let's say it was a Lions test, which combination would it be?
It would be Murray Sexton.
Of Carberry and Murray, or Sexton and Gibson Park?
Yeah, it would be Murray and Sexton.
But if you couldn't, if either the Munster partnership or the Leinster one. Not making it that easy for you.
You're not getting an answer, Adrian, enough, because it's a nonsense question.
OTB AM, Ireland's only sports breakfast show, weekdays from 7:30 AM, only on OTB Sports Radio.
Live 24/7 on the OTB Sports app.
The OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
I had my double espresso this morning at like 7:27. It's obviously still kicking in at 8:52. Owen, what the hell are we doing here? Where are we going? It's motor doping.
Yeah, probably a little bit better than a double espresso for you is having an actual motor in your bike if you were cycling. And Jean-Pierre Verdy is a name you might have heard this week. He was the founder and he was the director of the French anti-doping agency between 2006 and 2015. And he's got a new book out. It's called Dopage, ma guerre contre la tricheur, which to you and me is doping, my war against cheaters. So speaking on Stade 2 this week, he said, Lance Armstrong, I believe he had a motor in the bike. I still have the images in my head of a mountain stage where everyone is collecting themselves and he leaves everyone on the ground. At the end of the stage, I call all the specialists I know and they don't understand how this performance is possible, even with EPO. There was something wrong and all the specialists were telling me the same thing. It was not the EPO that made the difference. So when it comes to these allegations of mechanical doping, they're not necessarily new, but it does seem that there is plenty of split opinion on the subject. So on the one hand, you have people who have watched the videos on YouTube, videos of Fabian Cancellara, for example, at the Tour of Flanders and Paris-Roubaix in 2010, where his wheel keeps spinning when he falls off the bike. You've got people who are suspicious of Froome on Vantoo in 2015. And then, of course, you have people who are suspicious of Lance, that he had a little bit more than just EPO and a little bit more than blood doping. But then in the other corner, you have people who will reasonably question the presence of motor doping because it all sounds very conspiratorial. Show us the evidence on Lance, show us the evidence on Froome and Cancellara is what they would say. And they would be right on one level, except the fact that there has actually been a case of motor doping. It is not entirely pie in the sky. So let's go back through this morning and go through the actual facts that we have. And to 2016 is where we go, the one proven case we have in cycling. This was the situation surrounding Femke van den Driessen and the discovery of a concealed electric motor in her bike at the Women's Under-23 Cyclocross World Championships. So let's take a look at some of this footage from January 2016. So keep an eye on van den Driessen on the right-hand side of your screen. She's wearing number 10.
Number 10, look, yellow helmet,
look at her cadence, the fact that she's sitting down, looking pretty comfortable, climbing ahead of her competitors, many of whom are clearly working very hard. Some of them are even out of their saddles. They're going up a climb at the moment. Now, this bike was scanned using magnetic resonance testing and it detected a motor while the bike was in the rider's
area. Wow, look at that.
Area.
She's amazing. That's absolutely incredible. She's killing them. How is she doing it, Owen?
With, she used a motor called a Vivax. Vivax, which is a company I think that's actually gone bust as a result of the pandemic. It was concealed along with a battery in the C-tube. It was controlled with a Bluetooth switch installed underneath the handlebar tape. If you go on YouTube and look at that full thing, if you go about 45 minutes into that video, I think you can see her maybe fiddling with the gears in a way that doesn't look like she's fiddling with the gears, if you know what I mean. So she ended up getting a 6-year ban for that, but it was quite a rudimentary form of motor doping. It has evolved quite a bit over the last couple of years. But the question is, if somebody was willing to mechanically dope at an under 23 world championships, then surely it is totally plausible for the incentive to be there when it comes to a Grand Tour. Could, for example, the most famous cyclist of all time, the most famous cheater of all time, have ever used a motor? Well, let us give ourselves a reminder of what happened when he was asked if he had ever used a motor by one Ger Gilroy.
Absolutely not.
And did you ever consider using a motor for your bike?
Of course not.
Well, this is interesting, right? Because it's degrees of, like, what's the difference between using the best EPO and using a motor? I'm kind of interested because we're hearing that the motor's mechanical doping is something that there's a big story brewing, something's going to break. And, you know, it would be very interesting to hear, like, you were you guys were the best and you were determined to win from 99 onwards. And it's around this time, we think, that the Hungarian inventor starts to offer people stuff. And if I was in possession of a motor, the first person I would go to would be you and say, here, listen, what do you think?
Okay. And your point?
Did you ever use a motor?
Absolutely. I just told you, absolutely not.
And there's as a matter of interest, why? Like, what's the difference between doing that and taking EPO?
Gary, what are you a complete rookie? What are you talking about? In 1999, nobody even knew you could put motors were for motorcycles. What are you? I mean, are you out of your mind?
No, look.
I mean, honestly, seriously. I mean, first of all, I know that that's topical. I know that there has been a rider caught with a motorcycle or with a motor in their bike. But what? I mean, are you crazy?
No, I'm just talking to people who are saying that there's a big story about motors coming, and I'm interested to get your perspective on it and see if anybody ever offered you one. But obviously,
right? And I answered that, and the answer is no.
Okay.
That was in our pre-video days, by the way. So that's going to be repeated on OTB Gold tonight from 6 o'clock on the OTB Sports app. That full interview. So Lance, they're basically bristling at the idea of anybody knowing that you could put a motor in a bike in the late 90s. So a week after that conversation, we questioned that on Off the Ball, and we got on that Hungarian inventor, István Várhas, who gave Gerard this timeline of things.
This one, the first prototype, being sold in 98, the end of 98.
In 1998? Yeah.
Yes, 1998, and I had to stay quiet until 2009 for 10 years. It was a time for sleeping 10 years. And after, in 2009, I normally go to offering, I went to offering to big bicycle companies to make it in a public use.
Okay. So, sorry, to clarify, the first prototype was available in 1998, and that worked. And we won't pry too much about the details of maybe your customers.
Yes, this one, it was the first generation of this kind of motors, because this motors came from the military application. That time was able to miniaturizing with a so powerful magnets. This motor became very small. You can put in any place. So it's as soon you have a construction, you can put it in any kind of bicycle. It's not a problem. It's just a matter of budget.
So that's the voice of Hungarian inventor István Várhas. Remember his name, we'll come back to him in a moment. But he basically confirmed there that a prototype of his motor came along in 1998. There was a militarization of it in Hungary, and he managed to mass produce it. But he had to sign an NDA in 1998. He had signed exclusivity and couldn't work with anyone else. He had to shut up, go to sleep, as he said, until 2009. Now, in that same interview, Várhas confirmed to us that he knew Michele Ferrari, the infamous doping doctor who had worked with Lance Armstrong. Várhas said that Ferrari was interested in the motors for training purposes, for lighter days, going up mountains, for non-riders, for non-professionals to go up the mountains and help form a peloton, I guess, on a higher altitude. And then some time after that, we also spoke to Tyler Hamilton, former teammate of Lance Armstrong, and here's what he had to say on the subject of motors.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think it's credible that there has been in the past the use of motors in the biggest stage races in the world, in the Tour de France? Is it something that you think could have happened?
I think it could have. You know, after I did a little interview with 60 Minutes, and they showed me what it's all about and how small and inconspicuous it could be. I was surprised.
Were you? Like,
yeah, when I was a cyclist, I never had heard about it. And then all of a sudden, you know, I think 2008, 2009, you started hearing about it. And there were certain videos out there that looked pretty interesting.
Yeah, and there's loads more. Now that the stuff on YouTube comes up, you're like, well, hang on.
Yeah, there's some stuff that makes you definitely scratch your head. And there's been a rider or two that have been caught.
So. Yeah.
Were your bike from what I've heard from some, I do have a few inside sources, and from what I've heard, yeah, it's been used at the biggest races in the world.
Yeah,
by big riders.
Yeah, so Tyler Hamilton mentions that 60 Minutes show that CBS did a few years ago, and on that show, our Hungarian friend István Várhas claimed that on the day before the 2015 Tour de France started, he had delivered motorized bikes to a locked storage room somewhere in France. our friend Jean-Pierre Verdi, this is the guy with the new book, he was also on that show, and he said he had sources in the pro peloton that a dozen riders had used motors during the 2015 Tour de France. Now, there was no suggestion that Team Sky were connected to this at all, but they did come out to deny ever using motorized bikes around the time of those allegations. So in amongst the theories, what investigations have we seen? Because these are pretty serious allegations that as recently as in the Tour de France 6 years ago, there was fairly widespread motorized doping going on. So after that bust of the Belgian rider in 2016 in the Under-23s Championship, the National Financial Prosecutor's Office in France started to dig into the situation, but it wrapped up last year. So they'd been going for 4 years until the summer of 2020 and it found no further evidence. There was a couple of amateur riders here and there, but nothing in the professional ranks. Then there was also this in Velo News. The PNF's investigation included questioning the claimed inventor of the miniature motors that there could be installed in a bike frame, István Várhas. They also reached out to senior officials at the UCI, only to receive no input from several former members of the governing body. And Velo News also said last year that the UCI trialled various methods of checking for motorised bikes in the years after the Van den Driessen case, only to abandon them due to defective technology and misleading results. And this misleading results is quite embarrassing because at the 2018 Tour de France, they had started to use thermal imaging, X-ray scanning and bike tagging, and a thermal device picked up a burst of energy from a rider's pedals at the event. But it turned out to be a false alarm caused by a mechanical defect. So there's been a number of setbacks here, a number of frankly humiliating moments in the battle against mechanical doping. And then last year, when that investigation wrapped up, former professional Jean-Christophe Perrault lost his role as UCI manager of equipment because the probe closed, obviously. He was appointed 3 years previously to lead the fight against technological fraud. The UCI claimed he was dismissed because of the financial difficulties caused by the COVID pandemic. So he's lost his role. Who is the manager of equipment? Who is leading the fight against technological fraud? It's unclear what the UCI's next step in this is. The rumours and conjecture are going nowhere. And if this is an actual battle against mechanical doping, the UCI are losing pretty comprehensively at the moment.
All right. Good stuff, Owen. Thanks very much for that. It's worth digging out the 60 Minutes interview on YouTube, by the way, because they actually take the little motor that Várhas created and they put it in one of the old bikes that Tyler Hamilton would have been using, and then they put him on the bike and he presses the button on it and it's like zoom. He's like, wow, this is amazing. And that's, so Tyler Hamilton obviously knows exactly what the impact of EPO is because he took EPO very successfully for a period of time before getting caught, and so could compare and contrast the difference between what it felt like to be on EPO and also what it felt like to be on a bike. And he had one of his old bikes from when he was riding in the Tour de France, when, of course, he was a domestique for Lance Armstrong. So, you know, that you get to see exactly if this would have been possible, if it could have worked. Now, look, you pay your money, you take your choice. I still think it's like an interesting question, an interesting philosophical question. What's the difference between juicing and putting a motor in your bike? When you make the decision to cheat, you make the decision to cheat. What's the difference? If you're going to cheat a little bit, you want to be the best cheater, you may as well be the best cheater anyway. I'd love to get that philosophical debate teased out with Lance Armstrong now and say, if we go back to 98 and I'm saying, here's all the dope you can have and here's a little motor, are you saying no to the motor but yes to the dope? What's the mental gymnastics you do in your head to give yourself the freedom not to take this but to ingest and inject and however, like, horse the drugs into you?
It is a really fascinating question, and that to say that Tyler Hamilton was more receptive to your line of questioning than Lance Armstrong was is a bit of an understatement. But like, we did ask that of Tyler when he was in studio that time, and he was pretty blunt about saying, no, I would not motor dope, absolutely not. Yeah, I blood doped and I would dope, but I would not motor dope.
It's a mafioso style code of honor, you know, like for a long period of time, the mafia wouldn't deal drugs. But then we know loads of them did. That's the thing. It's like, oh, you know, you never shoot a civilian, but then a load of them did. It's like, but it was interesting, like, you know, and Tyler, for him, that was a line.
Yeah.
And maybe for lots of bike riders, there is a line. And maybe for Lance, there was a line too, and that's a line he didn't cross. It'll be interesting to see if this story goes anywhere or if this is the end of it now. Particularly, the UCI don't seem to care about it that much, is essentially the conclusion from our piece there. Again, let's wait and see if anything post-COVID happens.
OTB AM.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters. That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.